Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, our Bacta tank of talk. This particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is one of our deep dives. We're going to dive deep into celebrating Kylo Ren. Is it rude to combine his names that way? We're talking about the character that is both Kylo Ren and Ben Solo. We're going to have some fun celebrating what's great about that character. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok, and I think calling him Kylo Ben is probably what got him in trouble in the first place, right?
Yep, he should have found a way to be happy with Ben, but you know, he had that cool nickname in his mind, which I painfully relate to. I had some cool nicknames that I wanted people to call me as well, so I understand, Ben. I understand.
Absolutely.
We always want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. We are still recommending Out of the Shadows by Justina Ireland. That is the next book in the High Republic series, which we're going to be diving into very soon here on 4Center. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/4center. Again, that's audibletrial.com/4center. Force Center for your free audiobook, but that's not all.
Not all indeed. And Out of the Shadows is off my shelf again, which means we're not lying. We're going to review it real soon here. We do have another offer. Inside Editions, publisher of a ton of great Star Wars books, is offering 35% off across their website with a special Force Center code. To get your discount, enter the coupon code FC35 or visit the website with this link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we're recommending the Inside Editions book, The Lightsaber Collection. Check it out with the code FC35.
That's right. And you can see Kylo's lightsaber right in there. It's so fascinating to look at on big, beautiful, glossy pages. But Ken, let's get into this. It's great that your name is Ken and we're talking about Ren and Ben. So I have to be very careful at some point to not slip up and start talking about Ken Solo.
Yeah, and was given that nickname Kylo Ken on that other show, which I never asked for, but I got. So, here we go.
Sometimes we get things we didn't ask for, right?
Yeah.
One of the lessons of poor Ben Solo. We just want to celebrate this character because I think he's important. I think he's complex. He is tied to lots of other characters. So obviously that is his destiny to be tied to lots of other characters. But I feel like sometimes we almost talk in circles around him instead of just really focusing on him and how interesting and complex and fun he is, both as Kylo Ren and as Ben Solo. So that's what I wanted to dig into with this conversation. I want to start here, Ken. What is your big picture reaction to Kylo Ben now that we've had some time to live with him? Why do you find him compelling?
I find him compelling because he was this villain for a modern age. Man, that sounds like a VHS review on the back, right? And what I mean by that is I went into Force Awakens with a lot of thoughts and expectations for what I would want from the new villain of the series. And a lot of that was based on whether or not I super read them or not, you know, legend stuff, or, you know, we kind of guessed, and I, you know, was a little more free on clicking the stories back in the day that might be spoilers or set photos, to be clear. But we went into that movie thinking, no surprise, that was probably going to be an offspring of someone we loved. You know, we kind of went in with that. And so I had some thoughts on how to do that. And the more I thought about it, and look, I'm going to probably say it here first, and I'm sure we'll come up, but I just kind of want to almost make this as my one and done if I can. But I really, really think Adam Driver is the, for me, Ken, thinks Adam Driver is the best actor in any Star Wars film ever. Not you know, you can compare. I mean, Liam Neeson, everyone's got great resumes and done all the wonderful things. I still look at him and think, wow, what he did with the down to hand movements and scenes. I just really love it. And that came from someone who only was familiar with him. And I know he did other things, but I was only familiar with him from like season one of Girls, which I did watch. And I had a lot of him going into the movie. And he won me over, and he continues to win me over. So my big picture reaction is why he's so compelling is just, it took the question, and you've said this so well over the years, Joseph, with sequel trilogy is about a lot of things in it is about the legacy and living with what came before and our reactions to it, our relationships to it. And the more I thought about it, the more they gave me of Kylo Ren and Ben Solo. He was the villain for that picture. For this series, for this idea, like it all hung over him and all these possibilities and the pressures. I love everything about that.
Yeah, no, I mean, your back of the VHS tape is very similar to mine. And I think you're so right to just highlight Adam Driver. I think he did just a phenomenal job as an actor because he totally took what's on the page and he gave it so much life. I think in particular, the fact that he was able to give so many nuances to this character, like if you're going to compare him to sort of the big bad of Vader, which he does to his own detriment, Vader was this picture of being mostly stoic, a couple little jibes, you know, you kind of didn't quite know who is that man behind the mask. Can there be a human behind the monster? And I feel like Kylo is the opposite, is there's so much humanity bubbling up from him. You know, there's the just kind of like charm. There's a magnetism, right? There's all of this vulnerability, right? Of seeing that humanity in his eyes and the amount of closed captions for him that is like shudders, breathes shakily. And like those captions are dead on. It's just like every quiver of any muscle in his body anywhere is full of vulnerability. And yet he's also just a terrifying monster and a terrifying badass. And at moments, especially toward the end of Last Jedi and the beginning of Rise of Skywalker, this sad, lost cause. And he's able to portray all of those elements of just this kind of wild swing of emotions. If Vader was a mystery of, can that monster have emotion? Kylo's this, can this monster stop swinging from emotions and find something concrete to be, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot about how you process things in a lot of the characters in the sequel trilogy, I would say, but a lot with Kylo that's potentially important and I guess that angry young man trope is unfortunately a trope because it's very real in our real world. And I you and I were raised in a generation of you ain't going to cry. You ain't going to do that. You ain't going to go to therapy, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I personally see a lot of that in Kylo with what Adam Driver put into it and all the writers and creators and directors and the choices that were made, where it's a lot of the stuff that's on top of him and crushing him. You see it, you point to it and you go, yeah, yep, yep. But how he dealt with it and how he was just not able to process it, be allowed to process it, talk about it, know how to talk about it. It led to a lot of the problems even before the films, you know, and we're getting some of that backstory storytelling. And maybe that's just me taking a lot of seeing myself in some of it or seeing society in some of it. I don't know. But that's, I still watch a lot of his performances and just think of a person who has some righteous anger that does not know how to deal with it. I get that's connected to Anakin too, but it was very specific for the time for me.
I think so too. That was I got distracted talking about how awesome Adam Driver is, but I agree with the very first thing you said. I think he is a modern villain, an accurate reflection of things that we are wrestling with, I think across generations, but hasn't been portrayed on film in this sort of iconic way that fits into the world of the fantasy, that there's so much. It's established so well in The Force Awakens, and it's built on that his anger represents this kind of entitlement, that he is someone who grew up with what appears to be everything, right? The child of heroes with, I would imagine, plenty of financial comfort, given Leia's and Han's status, and gets to be trained by Luke Skywalker, the greatest Jedi ever. And yet somehow he kind of wants to control it and possess that legacy, but he also wants to throw it away. And you can first see him and just like something, some little thing doesn't go your way and you just throw a fit. And you can kind of see him as, you know, a parody of people who don't appreciate what they have. But then I think as it dives deep, it gets into exactly what you're talking about, of this danger of people having pain and being manipulated into thinking the only way you can deal with that pain is by lashing out. Anger is your only, don't cry, don't deal with it, don't talk about it, just blame other people and lash out, right? And that is a uniquely can be a young man experience. I certainly felt that at times in my life where, yes, I chose anger because that was the only thing that made it so I was still being the person society told me I was supposed to be. I wanted to cry or talk about it or ask for help, but I was told I should be angry because that's what keeps me a man, you know?
Yeah.
And I think there is a power of that in Kylo for sure.
There's some of you, I love just these freeform conversations sometime around this stuff. Often you say something that makes me think of other things. This it is so specific to this time and everything, but Anakin has got some of this, Han's got some of this, and how we see the Han we see in Force Awakens, which is a Han I love in the sense of older, broken, still found himself back to where almost he began because he ran away again, and how that is a generational byproduct of a Han probably couldn't process a lot of the stuff going on. Anakin certainly couldn't. Then he wasn't around Force Ghost or no to communicate to young Ben, like, here's how you do things, or here's a better way to do things. Right. Which is, you know, why he's worshiping this grand version of his grandfather that he shouldn't be. I think it, and it, so it also deals with the generational passing on of the problems, the sins, and just not how to deal with it, which is something that this is specific to to maybe us both here and just speaking of our perspectives of when we were born and when we grew up. And I've got a great, wonderful father, and he's very sweet and very calm, but he also, we don't talk and we don't process and we don't communicate, and how I had to move, not move past that or move past him, but deal with that in a different way. I think some of those themes are definitely there in Kylo.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think that his, you know, he's got the relationship with Han, but I'm sure Luke and Leia gave him plenty of room to be emotional and to explore his emotions in that. But he listened, you know, Palpatine is this sort of, this great metaphor for, the dark whisper that we could all hear of, like, or you could just be angry, which is easier and you can feel justified. So I think there's a lot there. Yeah. I really agree with what you're saying too, about he is a villain, of his time, both in kind of how he might reflect issues that we wrestle with in the real world, but he is such a generational villain, right? Of this misguided youth who wants to be Vader. And I think that is one of the things for me that makes the whole sequel trilogy really relevant to the whole, you know, Skywalker saga, is not just, Hey, here's some more story. It's Anakin fell, in the prequel. He, made a better choice in the original trilogy, but those choices linger on and they echo out, right? And this is, mm-hmm. this is, you know, I partially feel like Ben Solo fell victim to the shadow of Vader, right? Of those choices echo out, you know?
Well, you know what he fell victim to in my mind? the what George Lucas spoke of often back in 2005. I needed to come back and retell Vader's story because y'all got it wrong.
Right.
Y'all didn't pay attention. And that's always kind of been, and that's not some great insight for me. That's just always kind of been baked into the Kylo thing. People, we always used to speculate, is the ghost of Anakin going to show up and be like, hey man, you're looking at the wrong version of me, because that's there. And I don't think, I don't need it to be, I don't mean it. It's not like super meta, like they're pointing fingers at fans who are Vader fans and everything. It, you know, I can separate the two, but that's why the spirit of what George was saying, particularly, I always go to that 2005 celebration interview of like, you all, you dummies, you worship the guy at the cape. Like, what are you, the dark cape and the red saber? What are you doing? What are you doing? and you're right. And how unintended, you know, consequences beyond what Anakin was thinking in that moment, and just kind of makes sense for the story going forward.
Yeah. And I think that there's lots of ways to read Kylo, and that's what makes him fun. And I know some fans don't maybe respond to the reading of Kylo as an angry fan. And I totally understand that. But I also just think that that possibility is there, because here is this figure who grew up with Star Wars, grew up with the misguided idea that Vader is the right way to be, that that's cool, that that will solve all of your problems, is being angry and having the red blade. That'll fix everything. And then Kylo is so torn about the Skywalker legacy. Like he wants to own sort of what we know is Star Wars. He's got all these legacies, and he kind of wants to own them, and he kind of wants to push them away too. So it does make me think of the kind of fans, which I don't think I am anymore, but I certainly have been in the past, of like, this is mine. I know all about it. So I want to have the right to love it, but then I also want to get real cranky about the parts I don't like. And in this weird love-hate relationship with the legacy, that does make me feel like sometimes the way fans, like our generation really was when the special editions came out, when the prequels are like, I love Star Wars. And the only way I apparently have to express that right now is to be really mad at parts of it and to hate the guy who created it, to the point where I make, you know, t-shirts and documentaries about it is for me. I feel that in my journey as a fan.
It's very present.
Yeah. So that's just our overview. Let's dive into some more details of Kylo Ren, Ben Solo. Again, we've had a while to live with the complete sequel trilogy, and we've had some great supplemental storytelling, like Bloodline, where we learn he didn't know Vader was his grandfather, and he finds out when the whole galaxy does. And the Rise of Kylo Ren comic, where we get to see that, you know, Snoke really was able to kind of manipulate him for a long time, Palpatine in his head, but he thinks Snoke is a real physical person. He goes to visit and says, well, maybe you should just explore this different way. Maybe people are holding you back from being yourself. So get a lot more details in those, as well as all of the great work in the films. But with all that storytelling now, Ken, why do you think Ben Solo fell to the dark side? What did he fear that made him fall?
Oh man, this is welcome to the next hour of me just working through a lot of stuff here. I think part of the reasons he fell, and you summarized like the rise of Kylo Ren comic really well there and stuff in Bloodline. I think there could be a sense of there's a little bit of neglect that's been expressed. Some say, even Last Shot deals with Han kind of not knowing what to do with his young child, and it's very real. It's very realistic. I'm not a parent, but you know, one of my friends is a new parent, and he's struggling with how best to do it, and every day, every hour, and so Han and Leia maybe made some mistakes, some neglect, some assumptions that maybe he was. Next in line, he's got some force. He's got some force powers. He's got some force genes. Dare we say midichlorians roaming around, and just some assumptions of what he might want to do with his legacy. But we don't know that specifically. You know, we haven't got 5 year old Ben or junior high years Ben yet. We'll maybe get that story where he's kind of like, "Hey, I want to be a painter," and so, nope, you gotta do this. I don't know, or maybe he wanted to pick up the lightsaber all along. So anyways, that all kind of dumps down into this idea of what he feared. And I think legacy, I think there's a weight to this legacy, which is what we already discussed, but your uncle's Luke Skywalker, holy moly, he doesn't even know about the Vader stuff, but Luke, your mom's Leia, your God, that's Leia and Han, your uncle's Chewie. this is tough. And I have always talked.
Your godfather might be R2-D2. Who knows?
Right. I have always talked about, especially in the early days, you know, I think I probably thought this was more insightful than it is, but I've always given the example of the pastor's kid syndrome, which if you grow up in churches, it's like these pastors' children's no fault of their own almost struggle with seeing their parents who are viewed in a certain way. It's just not the parents' fault necessarily. It's their calling. It's their life. It's their job. And you go to church every Sunday and maybe the dad that disciplined you on Saturday because you didn't do your homework or something or didn't do your chores is being looked up upon and is a mentor and is a guide and has a certain status. And I'm not talking about celebrity or anything, but just like, hey, it's Pastor Steve. And I love Pastor. He saved my life. And they're probably telling that to you. And you're like, but on Friday he yelled at me and you're five and you don't know what to do. And then do you want to go to that? A lot of pastors' kids are maybe called into service and called in the ministry, but maybe they don't want to. And all that often explodes through the cracks. And a lot of pastors' kids really struggle. I'm not just talking about a walk away from religion or finding their own way. I'm just talking about legal struggles, drug addictions. Like I've being raised in the church in the 80s, like saw a lot of it. And I no fingers points at anyone. It's just a thing. And I always saw a lot of that in Ben, who's sitting around everyone probably saying, oh my God, your mom is great. And this, your uncle say, I was going to be blown up on Yavin 4, but your uncle say that all that I imagine probably built and built and built. And then you're naturally going to be, you're afraid that you're not going to be seen for who you are or who you think you might want to be. And then top it off there, you mentioned the bloodline thing, to not allow to be trusted with the truth at some point. I understand they're not telling four-year-old Ben, but at some point, hey, we're going to ship you off to this school to be trained by your uncle. By the way, your grandfather's Darth Vader. Don't do what he did. You know, like he wasn't given that chance. And that's just my overview on why I think he fell.
I think that's really, really good. I think I really agree with it. I think great insights from your own life and being able to observe up close what it can do to people to feel like you have not just a parent to wrestle with and to live up to, but somebody who kind of has an element of being legendary in real life, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, which is, I think, why a lot of this great story of legends come in of, you know, Kylo is so bitter because to him, he feels like he was let down by these legends, but to Rey, like Luke Skywalker's a myth. And Kylo's like, he's a jerk. He's a real person. And I think that's part of the reason that Luke is like, I don't want to be seen as a myth. I want to be seen as a real person who makes mistakes.
That's an exciting angle of it too, looking at Luke. Yeah, you're right. It's not the pastor's fault that everyone's like, please save me. It's occupation maybe at that point. Well said. Sorry.
Yeah, no. I think for me, the big picture is that when you really, really boil it down, I think for me, it is this fear of ultimately not being loved by his family. Mm-hmm. Like it expresses itself in all of these different ways, but that is the fear of they won't love me, right? I think that gets expressed exactly the way you are articulating of this fear of not living up to the legend. But I think when you trace that down, I was like, well, what's the fear there? If you feel like the whole galaxy expects you to be as good a Jedi as Luke Skywalker, as good a pilot as Han Solo, as good of a diplomat as Leia Organa, right? What's going to happen if you fail? Well, then they won't love you, right? You will have failed to live up to them, right?
Yeah.
So you have that anger of, like you're saying, maybe there's not room for me to discover who I am and discover who I want to be. But also, what if I'm never as good as them, right? Mm-hmm. And then even when he gets this other example to try to live up to of Vader, that's the fear that Rey perceives, right? That you will never be as strong as Vader, right? So I think he grows up with this fear of, I'm never going to live up to how great they are.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have this concrete in storytelling, but I think we can infer it. If you're a young kid and you kind of sense that all the adults around you love you, but they also know you are a time bomb who could go off, right?
Yeah.
How much that would start to just seep in and go like, why do they fear me? You know, mm-hmm. Or why do they treat me with kid gloves? And then the information he gets is, you know, you can understand how he would process it this way, that if he fears deep down that he can never live up to them and they fear him, then of course he's going to process the fact that poor Han's not great with his emotions. So that feels like a rejection, right?
Yeah.
Leia really wants to help him, so she sends him to Luke. That feels like a rejection, you know? Luke really doesn't want him to fall to the dark side, so he's really got his eye on him. And Luke gives into that moment of weakness, which is an incredible validation of everything poor Ben has felt of, they fear me and they'll reject me. That second of igniting the lightsaber is validation of all those fears, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the huge important thing, which maybe some listeners are screaming at the podcast, don't worry. The huge, huge part of his fall is that he has all of these fears that are very human that we can understand, and they're entirely manipulated by Palpatine, right? Mm-hmm. Like, imagine going through your life that's already kind of challenging. Mm-hmm. You have all these natural fears, and then you have this voice pretending to be a kindly, supportive, understanding person who's helping you see things in a different light, going, every fear you have is right.
Mm-hmm.
That's so powerful. And that's so disturbing, right?
Yeah. Well, you talked earlier too, as well, about that voice and what it represents. And you and I always love to ask the why of Star Wars. And I just Palpatine returning in episode 9 represents a lot to me of not moving forward, not letting go. Even in death, the Sith hold on. But also what you're talking about too, I really over time have come to love more and more that I am every voice you've ever heard inside your head, which, you know, we have questions about, well, how much Snoke was Snoke and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, fair conversations to have. And I want some of those answers too, but I think it represents what you said earlier. It is that voice you're saying here, a calm voice going, you're right. Be angry. And it is what we all face as humans. The little voice going, yeah, you're right. Throw that thing, throw that punch, cut that person off, honk your horn, scream, shout, give into it, get angry. And not in a good way. get angry and give in to every dark instinct you have. I think that really, that's why Kylo was in such a vulnerable spot at some point in his young life.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is powerful. Like, yeah, not get angry then and get motivated to make a difference. Yeah. It's get angry because that's the part of you they didn't let you explore. So of course there's truth over there. And then you just realize it is Anakin did as Kylo does in these films, just trapped in it, right? That line of to his father of like, you know, I want to be free of this pain, and just thinking like, just keep pushing through the anger, keep pushing through that will somehow give me what I've always wanted, that will, you know, will give me the sense that I am who I am and I'm totally in control. And, you know, I don't have to be feared that they don't love me. I don't even want their love anymore. That lightsaber belongs to me, but I don't even want it. In fact, you should kill the past. Like, yeah. It's just in this endless circle of pain.
Indeed.
Yeah. So here's a little bit of a left turn in our conversation, because I want to try to find some ways to celebrate Kylo in every way. All this great emotional work, all this pain, all this terror of being an actual scary villain, he still has like a ton of moments of comedy, I think. What are some favorite moments of comedy for you from Kylo Ren? And why do you think they work as comedy while still keeping him a terrifying villain?
I think any finger point in the spirit of his father is great. And it's one little detail that I absolutely love. I'm going to go to what might end up being my favorite one is in Rise of Skywalker. It's the helmet bit with Hux. It's really funny, but it's also what you're talking about. It's terrifying. Because especially we've gone through two movies of his outbursts and everything we can discuss here, which are funny in their own way. But to serve the character Hux, you got a problem, and I'm totally paraphrasing here, but just turn it into some modern sketch. But yeah, you got it. You got the big helmet you wear. Like, what the hell, man? you haven't had this for a year. What's going on? And we know, and we've talked about this. We analyzed the Force Center scene by scene with him and Palpatine of now he's afraid. He thought he fought to become who he was, and he did in a way, and he's Supreme Leader Ren. Now it's being challenged. Palpatine's just unveiled. I've been lying to you. You've been lying to yourself because it's me the whole time. And now the mask goes back on because it's that shield that he's got to hide behind. And he is immediate. The comedy is the fear is emerging. And I just think it works really well in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no, I absolutely love that. Yeah, I sense some unease about my appearance, I think, is the line. And it does, like, I think a lot of his comedy comes from he has that clear wit of his father and his mother, right? Yeah. But he's using it in dark ways. He's like being a bully. That moment of, like, I sense, unease about my appearance is, it feels like a bully walking up to, a kid who is not as physically strong and going, do you have a problem with my jacket?
Yeah.
Just baiting him, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's mean and funny.
Yeah, it's effective. It's totally communicating a point there, but also just it's also a great Hux moment. And then the other officer, like, I think it looks great. Like,
it works well. Yeah. I mean, there's some great moments in Force Awakens. The whole slashing the console scene is really great to show you that he is sort of trying to be Vader, but he doesn't have the poise. He's got all this anger and is letting it out in childish ways. It's a tantrum, right? Mm-hmm. So that is funny, but the lines around it are really funny because I believe Lieutenant Mataka, right, gives him the report of the droid got away on a stolen freighter. And he's still got the mask on, and he turns and says, "The droid stole a freighter." And it's down to Adam Driver's great delivery. It's a great line, but Adam Driver makes it work. And it feels like that is Han Solo's son who has fallen to the dark side, being a snarky little asshole.
Yeah, I totally agree. Absolutely agree. That's a highlight indeed.
Yeah. And then after that big slashing fit, he has the anything else.
Those little, you're right, those little lines get lost in the, because the heaving, he's the chest is stumping and heaving and he's getting angry and build up the anger, but he's still got the wherewithal to have some comedy, have some lines.
Yeah. And other one for me that I wanted to highlight because it makes me laugh in the midst of a very serious, in dark scene in some ways, is when Luke is confronting him on Crait, and they've had their first lightsaber pass, first or second, I can't remember. And Luke says, I failed you, Ben, I'm sorry. And just right on top of the line, Kylo Ren yells, "I'm sure you are." Yeah. And it makes me laugh because it's so perfectly petulant. And that is such a part of Kylo, is the more he gets lost to the dark side, the more he just feels not like this cool in control badass, but just like a wounded kid throwing a fit. And it is very serious and painful, but it's also funny because this is a great contrast between I am Kylo Ren, master of the dark side, to jerk, meanie.
Oh, totally. And I think that even traces to, Force Awakens with traitor and the thumping of his injury, like just bizarrely acting out because he's in pain. It all tracks for me up to the moment. And there's a lot of great stuff around that sequence of the moor and the blow that hunk of junk out of the sky. A lot of comedy, intentional and otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've touched on this a bit, but I want to dive in about how much Kylo Ren / Ben Solo is carrying the legacy of so many characters, right? Of Han, Leia, Luke, Vader, Anakin, Padme. Not really explored a ton in the film, but it's there. Which of those do you feel the most in the films? Which of those legacies do you really connect to, or do you see all of them?
Look, I do see all of them. I see all of them a lot. I see a lot of Han and a lot of Leia. But I think often I concentrate more on the Luke stuff, probably because of episode 8 and what responsibility Luke had and the responsibility Luke felt. And there's lightsabers involved in the Force and all that stuff. So I think I react to that one the most in the films over time, and looking back and digging into the level in which we do sometimes, I really look at Leia and this great leader, and the other side is this flailing Supreme Chancellor leader, rah, traitor, more guy, like, you know, and he's like, man, you know, in the back of his head, he's like, Mom ran this so well. So there's something like that too, that I gravitate to.
Yeah. Yeah. This is something we talked about a lot. Many people in the Star Wars community, when Force Awakens came out, that traitor in the forest is so similar to Anakin, right? It's the anger that isn't cool. It's petulant, right? And it's desperate to blame somebody else of like, you're the liars and traitors and thieves, you know? The spinning his ship in Last Jedi it's great. It's a great little Anakin nod. But I feel like in some ways I do feel like Han is the one that he connects with the most, maybe partially because the films really make it about that relationship with, you know, the droid is with your father. There's the spirit of Solo is still there. Snoke saying to him, but you know, there's just this attitude from him, even when he's Kylo Ren, even when it's easy to compare him to Vader and Luke, where he's brash, he's stubborn. Really what he's doing on his dark side journey is trying to deny his emotions, right? Like, I think Han has those moments where he's always charming. He's not falling to the dark side, but he's falling to the apathetic side, right? He's going like, great. Well, you know, I helped you get the coaxium, but I'm not going to join your rebellion. That's ridiculous. And like, you know, I really try and deny all through New Hope that he gives a damn, you know, even down to my favorite, one of my many favorite Han Solo bridge scenes in Return of the Jedi, where his instinct when Leia is upset is to go, and turn away, you know, and this triumph of turning back. And I feel like that's so much of what's going on with Kylo, of he's feeling the pull to the light and he's trying to deny it. And every moment where there is a well-acted quiver is trying to deny those emotions and just cling to his anger. And it's his grand Force version of Han's journey.
I think you're right. I think a lot of one of our favorite little moments in Solo that we talk about a lot of Kira telling Han, you know, you're the good guy. And we always talk also how that connects to Ray Carson's excellent Most Wanted novel. And we recommend you check that out. And how Kylo Ben's probably inside telling him that. It's probably Ben himself along the way going, this ain't you, man. This ain't you. And then he has to run farther away from it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, the finger points are so great.
Yeah.
To be a direct line to Harrison Ford, as Han Solo. I also really like what you said about Leia. I think, you know, there's so many shots from Empire to Last Jedi of just the pure power of how soulful, Leia can look. Her performances by Carrie Fisher of just this deep well of emotion. And I think he taps into that. There's the moments where he's truly just welled up with emotion that's those moments for me is like, there's Leia's son.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, it jumps off the screen for me at certain moments, especially when the Last Jedi moment, before he, his TIE fighter wingmates, fire on the ship. Yeah. There's some real, that connection, that legacy, and what he's not living up to and what he fears he's not living up to, it jumps out there in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So now that all is said and done with the sequel trilogy, and particular the conversation about Rey and Kylo, how do you feel about that relationship? We know that now that they are a dyad, two that are one, but how do you think that's expressed in human relationship terms? Why are they drawn to one another?
I think the circle that we've talked about before of Child of Destiny, born in the light that shows darkness, being Ben and Child from nowhere, though that truth is hidden, but literally born, raised nowhere, born into the dark that shows the light, and these big choices and these identity and the legacy, you know, I think it, even without the dyad and even calling it that, I think we all felt that in Last Jedi with that hand touch of naturally, they're the only ones that could see each other and see the struggles. And that was really powerful for me. And I didn't though I love nine and episode, I wasn't super concerned about the high, almost high fantasy stuff for me of the dyad and the this and then the two makes one and my robe, all this stuff. It was just for me, an icing of on the cake that was baked in that hut in episode 8 for me. It's like, yes, they're connected beyond any romance, beyond any friendship, beyond they're connected in a level that we all hope to find of someone who actually sees you.
Yeah, just star-crossed souls. Yeah, and as many people have pointed out in The Last Jedi, of the patterns there, that the pattern that Rey is using to practice with the lightsaber is the same pattern that Kylo is using to attack Luke on Crait, and lots of so great visual storytelling. But yeah, just the utter intimacy of that finger touch and the meaning behind it in The Last Jedi. I feel like that's, for me, one of those places where The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker are really shaking hands of, like, there is a connection between these two that is sort of almost, it's cosmic, right?
Cosmic, yeah.
And you feel it.
Yeah, and you feel it, and it's back to episode 7. We're absolutely going to talk about what I always refer to as the double interrogation scene of their first fight, is that mental battle in episode 7 on the Star Destroyer when she's captured and he takes his mask off really for the first time. Like, she sees inside him, she sees inside her, like their worst fears are on display, and that's scary. And that's frightening, even just on a human to human romantic level or friendship level. But now add the weight of the galaxy on it there. It built from there.
Right. Yeah. That it's initially can be scary to feel that connected to somebody, right? To feel like you can really look into their soul and they can look into yours and they suddenly know your fears. And then it can be comforting when, you get to Last Jedi or nobody understands me, but you do, kind of feelings, you know, and then that just kind of hanging question of what are we going to do with this connection? It's very like cosmic, mystical, but it also really works on human terms for me. I know that there are many, many strong feelings, utterly acknowledge that. But I think for me, I do just really like this great story that I think they both fear being alone, but you know, you put it as a child of light, child of nothing, or child of darkness, mm-hmm. With Palpatine. But for me, it's just this great story of, you know, for all these reasons we talked about, Ben pushed his loved ones away. He has a massive collection of mm-hmm. of wonderful loved ones, and he pushed them away. And Rey fears being alone because she thinks her loved ones left her. So you got this contrast of, I had everything and I gave it up. And Rey's like, I had nothing and I feared that I never will have anything. But they're both a fear of being alone and unloved, right?
Love and hate, light and dark in a way, at the core of Star Wars, right? In a lot of ways. I think you're really right about that, and both connecting over that. That's why it was so powerful for me. Yeah.
And I think then for Last Jedi, one of the things that is powerful for me about their connection and about this conversation and what Kylo is trying to get through to her by telling her his version of the story of what happened between him and Luke is this idea of being feared by the people you love. Right. And it comes down to this sort of cosmic truth as well, that nobody else in the galaxy right now probably could understand exactly what they're going through, because they've both been burdened with this huge amount of power and they struggle to figure out how to use it. Right. If Ben has grown up his whole life kind of feeling like, I have this great power and it makes people treat me with kid gloves, and Rey's just discovering this, I've had this awakening, there's something inside me, it's always been there, but it's awake now, and I don't know what to do with it. Looks like I'm not going to help you. In fact, I'm afraid of you. I should have been more afraid of my own nephew, but I'm afraid of you. Like, what a great specific thing that they are connecting on, right? You know, to take it to that sort of human level, it is like, you know, two people who meet in the, you know, especially if they're young and they start texting because they're having the same problems at home as one another that they don't feel like can talk to anybody else about. It's that, to me, is a part of the power of that finger touch of like, we're both going through something that very few other people could ever understand. And the people we're trying to turn to talk to about it don't want to.
Yeah. We didn't get to explore that as much in prequels and original trilogy, right? I'm thinking mostly just of Anakin and Luke. I think everyone, there's a lot of Jedi around Anakin to talk and some nice platitudes and give him some nice bumper sticker lessons, but no one fully understood. You know, Obi-Wan can only go so far. Padme, I think, tried not to, you know, hold her to the flames over that. But Luke, I'm thinking of the stuff with Leia. Like, I think he was just starting to get to that with Leia. Like, yeah, look, basically on that, you know, Endor, like, I got to go confront our father, by the way, and you don't understand. And where, if he had, if Leia had a little more research or time or moment, maybe she would understand and connect in a real way. All that to say, it's slightly different to me with what we're seeing with Rey and Kylo Ben of, they 100% we understand each other. And that was built in from the beginning of their story.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's a ton of power on the connection. And then I just do want to take a moment to talk about, you know, the way that they kind of find their way back to one another in Rise of Skywalker. Mm-hmm. I think there's a great humanity to that as well, because I just love how much Kylo just wants her to give into the darkness. I think partially as a manipulation, because then he will feel validated. His, you know, he keeps pushing this viewpoint of, well, I can never go back to Leia and you can never go back to Leia because the dark side is our nature. Kind of trying to relieve ourselves of responsibility here.
Yeah,
we don't have any choice. And boy, will I feel better about it if you join me in that, which is not healthy or great. But I think there's also that still getting to that core fear of Kylo doesn't want to be alone. He wants Rey by his side, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And then the other thing I was thinking about with Rise of Skywalker that I wanted to run past you is I really like that throughout the films, a ton of their actual conflict is pretty literally fighting over something, to literally possess something, right? The Force Awakens, their fight is who can possess the map to Skywalker, right? And then in Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, they're literally fighting over the saber. It's a physical object and is a symbol of legacy, right? And in the beginning of Rise of Skywalker, they're fighting over those wayfinders. It's a literal object, but it is a symbol of, you know, fighting for the resolution to this journey. So everything in their conflict has been about which one of us will possess the thing.
Yeah.
And it gives just extra, to me, beauty to when they do manage to come together, that their relationship is all about sharing now. It's all about Rey giving her life energy and then Ben giving his life energy. So there's this great, just sort of a symbolic, even when you feel that great intimacy, that great connection to somebody, you know, which way is it going to push or pull? Is it going to be about possessing, or is it going to be about sharing?
That's a big giant well said, sir. And just how what each pursuit represents for them at that point in their life, a lot of it about identity, destiny, legacy, past, present, future, right? Fighting over who controls that. That's an all leading into, in a way, I'm throwing it back at you, like giving a lot of that up in those moments. I think, you know, they're not fighting. They're fighting for more than just a little item indeed, but more their identities. I don't know if I'm maybe making sense, but at the end, there's a lot of giving up of self in that final battle with Palpatine coming together for that.
Exactly. I think you're exactly right, because it is, they're finding that, I feel like they're just sort of there. They are being in the present, right? And they're responding to what is needed of them and needed to, for Ben to do what the memory of his father said of, you know, Leia is gone, but not what she fought for, what she stood for, you know, and yeah. Rey being able to push past her fear that she will lose people if she fully gives into her power, and trusting that she can use her power in a way that will help people. And they're both kind of coming into this in their own journeys of being selfless, but then coming together of being kind of very present in the moment and focused on not as obsessed with themselves.
Yeah, the word present is, that's very powerful, right? It's no longer about what's to come. It's no longer about what was. It is about what is right now.
That is a great succinct way to say what I was saying. So I think
we both get there, man. Some days we love just finding ourselves. So we're driving around in circles around Star Wars.
Exactly. Just doing donuts in the Star Wars parking lot. But we are going to take a quick break, you know, spinning out our tires. And then we're going to come back to talk about just some of the great moments of both Kylo Ren and Ben Solo throughout the Star Wars sequel trilogy. We'll be right back. Yeah.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And we are back to continue our discussion to finish what we ourselves started by celebrating Kylo Ren and Ben Solo, Kylo Ben. We're going to talk about just some of our favorite details, favorite moments. Ken, let's go to Force Awakens. What are some favorite Kylo Ren moments in The Force Awakens for you?
I mean, in making these lists, it's sometimes that balance between, remember when he stopped that laser bolt? Holy bleep, that was cool.
Which I think, valid.
Yeah, because I love that moment. It was a great trailer shot. And it's okay. Let's release the pressure for some. It's okay to want some cool villains in Star Wars. We get it.
Absolutely.
Even I think deep down, even George gets it. But that's why he has them designed the way he does. But no, there's that. But I was thinking about it and trying to keep in maybe the bigger conversation I anticipated we'd be having. I do love the first moment that he takes his helmet off in front of Snoke. So I love the Rey one where he takes it off with such that feathered hair unfurls and the theater snickers. And I do remember that, unfortunately. And he's so confident, and she just immediately just jabs him right in the side. Like, oh, you're not going to be Darth Vader. And he's immediately like, whoa, wait, what? But so I like when that kind of starts to flow into the stuff with Snoke, where they did go back and digitally add the helmet to his face, to his head before with Snoke, where the scene was going to be, not include the mask before with Hux and everything. And they went back and said, no, it's not right for the story, for the spirit of the story. He's a different Kylo's starting to crack. And so I really do love that moment for what it represents. And just what, and because you can see the face, you can really see what Adam Driver's doing as a performer, what Kylo as a character is thinking, and the panic and the fear and everything is rising. And that cool guy stopping the laser bolt is kind of already in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, because his legacy, which he allegedly doesn't care about, is threatened, right?
Yep. Yep.
Like, I'm supposed to be the powerful one, right? Mm-hmm. And who is this? Who is this nobody to be powerful, you know, and to make me fear that, like, I transitioned from maybe looking up to Han, Luke, Leia to I'll look up to Vader, and now she pierces this that even that I have a fear of, you know?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely great. For me, I think in terms of the cool, it's cool, but it also continues all throughout the films and adds emotion. It's the great physicality that Adam Driver brings, but I can't get through this without absolutely celebrating the lightsaber ignition stomp.
yeah.
Right? The great dance invented by Kylo Ren. It's like cool and frightening. Like, I think if you had ever faced him or seen him before, that would terrify you. Like, oh, he's gonna pull out the saber. He's gonna do that little stomp, and it's got that extra anger to it, but it also feels like just a little bit petulant, and just like that he needs to feel himself, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not confident enough to just ignite it, you gotta stomp too.
Well, it also ties to the scene we were talking about earlier of him destroying the computer room there, the monitors, because it's the same type of energy, right? Like, it's a pose, man. He's putting on a pose.
Yeah. Couple other little moments for me from Force Awakens. The whole scene with Vader's helmet, right? I think that's just so great because it was really powerful to make it explicit. Like, we're so used to stories of good people who are tempted to be, you know, fall to the dark side, to be more violent than they want to be angry than they want to be, and to just have it put explicitly of, I feel it again, the pull to the light. And this desperate, like the way he says, you know, Supreme Leader Snoke senses it, you know. Mm-hmm. you just totally get the sense that he didn't trade anything. He was afraid. He didn't trade up. He was afraid he wasn't going to live up to his parents, and now he's afraid he's not going to live up to Snoke and Vader, you know.
Right. Yep. Problem not solved.
Problem not solved. And just a delivery thing for me, especially as you get to live with these films for a while, and they start to have that same kind of rhythm that I've lived with the original and in the prequels. I love it when he's looking in Rey's mind. He says, I see it. I see the island.
Yes.
It's just like a great, very human rhythm.
Really is.
Any other Force Awakens moments that you wanted to celebrate?
So you talk about the physicality. And I made reference to it earlier, but when that whole pounding his injured body and the injured side that took the bowcaster, which, you know, clearly we're setting up all through the movie. A bowcaster, turns out, who knew, pretty powerful. You know, I love, but even sometimes question Han after all these years going, wow, nice gun. Like, I've never paid attention to Chewie, Han. We can talk about it another time. But there's something about it, too, that is a little ties into some comedy moments for me, but also just the panic and the collapse and the brokenness that's emerging right there in that moment. And just, again, the choices of this actor, you know, and the director and everyone coming to, like, this is what he'd be doing in the moment. It's kind of a bizarre little move, right? The pounding, he's just angrily pounding the spot where he is bleeding out. I love the decisions behind it, even though not all of them might be clear to me as a viewer, just even in that, especially in those early moments, in the early viewings, I should say. I've always loved that.
Yeah, no, I think it serves so many purposes to me. I think it is just a little reminder that like he's literally, you know, weakened. He is injured. But for me, it always has this sense that it's like he's injecting himself with, you know, steroids. Like he thinks he is, right? Because he tells Han that, you know, he wants to be free of this pain. And it gets set up even by Snoke that, like, you know, this is going to be this great challenge for you to face your father. Can you do what you're meant to do? And he thinks, you know, even in Force Awakens, like, all these legacies are just confusing and garbage, and just the past needs to be slaughtered so I can become who I want to be. And he's filled himself with all these things, and then suddenly it doesn't work, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the promise of like, just give in to your anger and it will give you focus, it will give you power. And I almost take that punching of like, hey, it's not working.
Yeah,
this was supposed to work. I'm going to pound on the injury. I'm going to pound on the pain. I'm going to pound on the anger to like pump myself up. And like, yep. It's not working, dude. That's not the drug you think it is. You know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a great choice all around. It's a great choice.
Yeah, really powerful. Just a great scary villain move. Mm-hmm. Let's move on then to The Last Jedi. What are some favorite moments from The Last Jedi?
I went straight to a big one, and sometimes when you and I have these discussions, you don't maybe want to go to the big, giant, obvious trailer moment. I can't with this film. The hand, the offer in the throne room to Rey, with the throne room burning behind him, the embers falling down. It was a great trailer shot. It got us all to go, whoa, and maybe make a million reaction videos out there, you know, that got clicks. Everyone need those clicks. Not to be cynical. I love it, man. I just love it. It is so in this loud space franchise with explosions and fantasies and destinies and big choices. It is just this very simple, like, take my hand. Oh, man, all the problems will be solved, right? And he's, in one way, in a classic Star Wars sense, trying to seduce her to the dark side of the Force and everything, but he's also trying to heal himself, right? We've talked a lot about justifications for who I am and what I am and the mistakes I've made. Just you see me. I'm admitting it now. I didn't admit it last time around. When I took my helmet off and you saw the truth, I wasn't ready to admit it, but you're right. You're right. I see you. You see me. Let's go take all this over together. And it's small in this big, giant story, and I love it.
Yeah, no, I think just the writing and the delivery are so powerful. And I feel like it is another almost Han moment, because we've mm-hmm. talked a lot about how often it's played for fun in the original trilogy, but how often Han says something kind of loud when it's kind of the bravado, and then he says something quieter or real to Chewie or the Falcon or himself.
Yeah.
About I don't know how we're going to get out of this one. And this is almost has that level of bravado and purpose followed by just utter reality, right?
Yeah.
Because that line is, you come from nothing, you are nothing. And that is just total manipulation, right? Like, mm-hmm. That's what he believes. I think that's how he interpreted the mutual vision they have.
Right.
But it's a manipulation of Rey. He's pressing on her deepest wound and saying, everything you've ever feared is true. You are nothing. Nobody is ever going to love you. And then adds that, but not to me, join me, which I feel like is still like a little bit of manipulation of like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredibly scary real world stuff of like, no one else will ever appreciate you. So come with me. Right.
Yeah.
Even though I'm maybe not in the greatest place. But then that please, right. Mm. The way it's delivered, the way it's almost escapes him. Right.
Yeah.
That's the honesty of like, I don't want to be alone. I'm so alone. Please, please don't let me be alone. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, right there with you on even all leading up to that. Please is kind of this, heal me. Could give a damn about you in a way. You know, he's not asking her to, you know, go get married and have 2.5 kids and a dog in that moment. But I love that the please is the real, the please is the pain. And it's all there. It's very, very wonderfully layered, which we love with Kylo.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a big one for me. The screaming more is great, right? To fire on Luke because he's so afraid of this unstoppable legend that he can never live up to, and it's just such a great just little picture of the dark side of like, but I shot a giant laser at it. Did you try shooting more giant lasers at it?
Yeah,
it's funny, but it's also just like so well delivered. If he needs this, he needs to have Luke be, you know, stoppable.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's please as well.
It is please as well. Yeah. Yeah. And on the more like cool side of things, like we talked a lot about his defeat of Snoke over the years and that great shot of Rey catching the blade. But it is this, he's still enraptured by the dark side, right? But it is a moment where he does feel like he is coming into his own, where he is making a choice that he is stepping out of the shadows of all of his various mentors, and he is outsmarting somebody who he has previously been made to think he can't possibly live up to, right? It's such a far journey from Supreme Leader Snoke mm-hmm. senses it to I can fool him, you know, call me a child in a mask.
Yeah.
And it is just cool, right? The mm-hmm. seeing him do the little maneuvers and actually, like, even though it's still wrapped up in darkness, seeing the son of Leia, the grandson of Anakin, use that blade, yeah. you know, it, to defeat his enemy in this subtle, cool way. It is him using the Force, using that lightsaber, and it is really cool.
Cool Kylo. You need some cool Kylo.
You need some cool Kylo.
Therefore,
that's right. All right, let's move on to Rise of Skywalker. What's a favorite moment of Kylo there?
Big ones. I we have talked a lot. We'll never stop talking about the memories of Dad scene, the final scene with Han. It's so beautiful. And there's so things, and I think that's kind of where you start to make that transition where we're talking about cool Ben moments. So I'll put that up there just in general. I really love just the beauty and the coolness of the first lightsaber fight with Rey and Rise of Skywalker, the one that where she's in his apartment complex there, his studio apartment on the cruiser, and he's down below in Kijimi, and just the imagery of the red berries on the white floor. I just love it, man. I just love it, and I love that he's kind of, you know, there's a calmness to him that in the moment there's a lot of like, oh, there you are, oh, that's where you are, you know, to her, but then he's also kind of panicked to his to his troops, right? She's up on the commander. You know, it's the duality there. But the moment I'll submit, we did do the Force Center scene by scene, referenced it already, but him meeting Palpatine, him coming mm-hmm. face to face with this monster, him getting some truth and the fear setting in, the challenge, he's the Supreme Leader and now that's in question and he doesn't know what to expect and now information about the girl and all this. I just love everything about that scene and... I'm not going to say it's the start. It's definitely not the start of the turn to Ben, but like you see some of the, you know, it's Kylo aware that it's all a put on and in some ways, and it's all been him trying to be something. And that even then that big answer, what he thought, the big step he took, which was powerful to the character of Kylo and powerful to himself, you know, wiping out Snoke and becoming this man. It's all on quicksand and something's wrong. And there's a bigger, better answer and a bigger, better solution he's got to find. And he thinks power and control and masks and anger is the way to go. Naturally, that's what he's lived with for the few years here. But I love that opening scene.
Yeah, no, that is very well said. And a thing that I love about just almost from a point of physicality, the just kind of soulless hacking of the Alzamek cultists, right? On Mustafar. Where it seems like he's just again just trying to kind of like power himself up. There's some cool moves in there of just enjoying the pushing down with the blade and the one where he just pulls the Alzamek forward to slash him. It's just like it's really brutal. But in both that scene and in down in Palpatine's horror lab, I love that he continues this visual that we've had since Force Awakens. Of this holding the blade straight out and looking over it, right?
Yes.
It's such a unique Kylo thing. He's got the stomp, but you know, he does that in Force Awakens, he does it in Last Jedi. It is a mix of like intimidation of his enemies, of kind of prepping. It's just so great that this is a character who's tied up in feeling like he is not allowed to be unique, allowed to be the person that he is meant to be. And here he is with the fighting move that I can't think of anybody else who has that real, like, stare at you over my blade, holding it out like a rapier, you know?
Yeah.
And he spends like almost his whole confrontation with Palpatine with the blade up like that, you know?
Right. It's an odd draw, but there's a lot of major league pitchers that throughout history that do the glove up and all you see is their eyes as they're about to fire a fastball at your head. And I like that for me. Baseball guy.
His dark side ball playing there.
It's Kylo Ren, Dave Stewart, and Andy Pettit. There you go. Those are the ones.
Yeah, then the other thing I wanted to shout out from Rise of Skywalker, I mean, there's so much stuff that is great in emotional depth, but just, again, celebrating, like, the physicality of this character and what makes it fun to watch the movies again and again. I love that he doesn't immediately ignite his blade in the throne room battle, right? That he does the evasion. And then just a weird little detail, when he jumps down from that main part of the throne room, he does that little leg click together.
Yeah.
And it's just like, there's so much personality in the way he moves, the way he fights. So I love that. And then the final thing for me, I really love how truly soulless he looks and feels in the lightsaber battle across the Death Star wreckage, those big waves pursuing Rey. It feels like he's really down to this, like, I want her to join me, but if she doesn't, then the other option is get rid of her. And he's just really... really almost seems like in his most bleak, but that gets reinforced by this great image of, I love, they've been leaping over the waves. Rey leaps over one and then's like, where is he? And that shot of him is a great trailer shot of him just walking out of that crushing wave is really powerful.
Not for nothing, man. I think a large portion of that ticket to that movie comes from that shot. Like I could watch that sequence time and time again.
Yeah. And just walking through that wave, just like from Rey's perspective, this unstoppable, this soulless machine that's given himself over to the dark side. And he just looks sad, you know, like this sad, unstoppable, evil puppy dog.
He doesn't look happy chasing around the one person with the true connection trying to kill them. Yeah, he doesn't look happy.
No, he's not in a great spot there, but that's going to turn around real soon for him. So let's move into that. We get to spend some time with the Ben Solo in The Rise of Skywalker. What are some favorite moments for you of Ben Solo?
It's very hard to not include the shoulder shrug that went viral. You know, everyone do the Ben shrug. And then, with the lightsaber, it's hilarious, but also powerful. But you know what I love? I want to highlight at the very end where he kind of has that laugh with Rey after, you know, they're together there and the kiss and all that kind of stuff. Maybe it hits for others. Maybe it hits, for some and not for others. But I love when he laughs, because a lot has been made that he doesn't really speak after the moment with Solo, right? He doesn't really have a line, and it's all reactions. It's all physicality. It's all the face, the eyes, the mouth, the soul. And I think that one, just this kind of like laughter, this relief, this joy, and seeing him feel that in that moment, it was more powerful to me than the kiss, or more powerful to me than giving up even his life for her, everything. I'm always drawn to that moment. And if I'm watching Rise of Skywalker, which I do often, and sometimes you get busy, sometimes you do your chores, sometimes you're coming in and out of the room, that's one of the moments I sit for.
Yeah, no, it really is that little smile, that little laugh. It's almost like, for me, it's a moment of joy, right?
Yeah.
But it's also just like, it's almost like this, we went through all of this to get here, to get this to this moment, and we could have just been here from the beginning, and almost like laughing at it. Like, sometimes the way, I know you and I are both big on this, of like, that's a part of what comedy is for, is taking something hard and using comedy to cope with it. And I almost feel that, it's just like, isn't it absurd? It took us so long to get to where we always should have been.
I'm right there with you on that. I'll read that in that. I totally do that. And that's kind of every journey, right? How many left turns and right turns have we all taken in our lives? And you just kind of, ha, man. And I'll put that in there. I think that's there as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one. This is really fun to get into the scene on the bridge. And is he Kylo or is he Ben? You know, I don't think it is as simple as throwing a switch, right? But I really think by the time he says dad, you know, he's made his decision, right? Rey has healed him up to a point. He's felt the presence of his mother, you know, reaching out to him. The scar is gone. He's just trying to take that next step of, can he let go? And it feels to me like he's made his decision. I mean, he wants to tell his father that he loves him, right? And just the memory that his dad would know, hey, kid, you're my kid. I know how hard it is for you to say this, so I'm not going to make you do it. But the delivery to start with dad, and just that one word, and know that's what he is going to try to say.
Yeah, that, I mean, yeah. That whole scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Often transported back to the first time I saw that, and you were sitting right behind me. It just, yeah, it's tough to not find it moving every time for me. And again, I know everyone has a different relationship with all these films, and this one is the latest one to bring about passions. I understand. But yeah,
that not the last. Yeah. I think other thing for me that I wanted to highlight, I mean, there's so many great, every beat with him as Ben Solo is just kind of a beat. The ow, the shoulder shrug, right? There's so many great beats. But one that I really like that I also wanted to highlight because it doesn't get talked about as much is there's the battle with the Knights of Ren where he is blocking an attack behind his back. And he's got that little exhale, right?
Mm-hmm.
It almost seems like he's centering himself. And for me, maybe I'm doing a lot of headcanon reading into it, but it's just like he is using the light side again for the first time in a long time, you know, and he's using it to defend himself and to survive and do the right thing. But it just almost feels like getting back on the bike the way he's like, okay, whew, yeah, gotta stay clear and present. And this is what it feels like to use the light side again.
Exactly what I finally had a good set of stand-up comedy again. I came off stage and went, oh, yeah, we're back. Okay.
I just blocked an attack by a Knight of the Ren from behind. Yeah.
Love it.
All right. Well, moving on to controversial things. Indeed, as always, acknowledge that there are many very, very strong feelings about this. We know that many fans would have loved to see Ben Solo live. I personally find it bittersweet that the stuff that we got with him is so great and we only get to spend such a short time with him in Rise of Skywalker as Ben Solo. But ultimately for you, Ken, does his death work? And if so, why does it work for you?
Yeah, for me being the key here, look, it does work for me, but I'm saying that as someone who probably on Force Center, I can't recall specific times, but definitely on other shows I would appear on too, of saying, man, wouldn't it be kind of cool to see. You know, I'm accepting that I think we're going to get a redemption of Kylo Ren, but that he still has to live with that and be around and just go to the grocery store and people kind of being like, hey, what's up, jerk? And what that means, because we didn't really get to see that necessarily with Anakin and all that kind of stuff. In fact, the legacy of Anakin is, obscured by the specter of Vader, and the Bloodline deals with that and everything there. So I'm someone who said that, and I can get behind that conversation. I completely understand it. But for me, at the end of the day, when I see all these films and I reflect on this, and we have these kind of discussions, I think there's a little bit of, however, like he paid for his sins a bit and he made some choices. I think of Star Wars Resistance. There's that episode where the two refugee children show up to the Colossus and they're talking about that monster, and it's Kylo, and it ain't good. It's not good stuff. You know, he's done some bad, as did Vader before him. So I think that works for me on a little bit of a spiritual level, which does not mean I'm suggesting that you all have to die because he did something wrong. Please don't take that. But for this character, for this mythic story, I am here for the myth, the space fantasy. I am here for the big lessons. I'm here for this poetic story. And I'm not just talking about it rhyming. I'm just talking about this is something that is of my world, but not in my world all the time. It's a movie. And this is a very epic, powerful, and bittersweet ending. You know, if there's going to be an episode 10 and, you know, Adam signed on for it. Yeah. Of course I would have liked that. Of course I would have liked to see Disney Plus Ben Solo at home. Yeah. Too bad. You know, I agree with your saying it's bittersweet because we want to, it's almost like we're going, man, we could have had more of him if he just made the right decision, Ben. But there's lessons to be had in that. And I'm okay with that. And that's why it works for me.
Yeah, no, I really agree with what you're saying. Even, you know, the audios are out there of Force Center episodes. I was really intrigued by the possibility of what are the other options? If he does redeem himself, if he does do the right thing, I guess it's not even redeem. If it's he makes a better choice in the moment, but he still has to survive and live with what he's done, so we can really have in Star Wars a grand discussion of, you know, what does redemption truly mean? I had
weird predictions that he isolates himself for a while on Octo to think about what he did.
Yeah, right.
Or you get the suggestion that he is going to be a part of the galaxy trying to make things right eventually. You know, like, I get all that. I'm really intrigued by that. I think Star Wars is going, I think that's one of the obvious stories to wrestle with in Star Wars at some point. And I think we've had different versions of it, but I think we're going to get that in a big way at some point. I think his passing works for me on a couple levels. Ultimately, one, it's just the mantra that you and I have sometimes here on the podcast of engage with the story that you've been presented with, not the one that you decided ahead of time it should be, because that's what it is. That is the story on the screen. So finding a way to find what is bountiful there, that's a part of it for me. I do like, as many people have pointed out, that this great journey of Anakin falling to the dark side because of this fear of loss, right? Because of this fear that what pain would he have to go through if Padme died? And that's, he was coming at it from a selfish standpoint, right? And that's what caused him to be afraid and take all these terrible actions based on what might happen or what could happen, not what is literal, right? Mm-hmm. So everything about what Ben does of giving his life energy to save Rey, it is this idea of, can you ever become powerful enough to save the ones you love, is what Anakin is obsessed with.
Yeah.
And here is Ben sort of presenting, like, it's not an imaginary fear of something that might happen. It's not about my pain of losing her. It's about she is dead right now, and I can selflessly give my life so that she can continue on. I choose to do that. It is just very rich when you want to start comparing the journey of Anakin and Ben Solo. So I do think that's really interesting. I think it ties together all 12 movies in a lot of thematic ways. A ton of fun to examine.
Yeah.
I also think that in terms of just resolving the relationship between Ben and Rey, right? That by the time that we come to this moment where she has given him, life energy to bring him back from death, right?
Right.
To correct her own mistake. And at the time that he pulls himself out of that crater and Rey has sacrificed herself to save the galaxy, one or the other of them is going to continue on this mortal plane, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like by him choosing to give his life essence to her, it's this selfless act. It's this Jedi act. It's this sharing of this ultimate connection that they have. But also the whole story of how a Jedi passes into, being conscious within the Force is about this, an act of selflessness in your in your final moments. And because he chooses this selfless act, for me, I feel like they're always connected, right?
Yeah.
That he does give his life on this mortal plane for Rey to continue. But because of the way he does this, he is still aware within the Force, and that's the language of the Star Wars films with the disappearing. And that for me means that, well, from Rey's perspective, he's still there. It's in a very different way. It's in this very cosmic way, but they're still connected and still are a part of one another's existence, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I absolutely agree with you on that one there, and what it could mean, and engaging with what's presented is pretty powerful when you find what's there for you to connect to, even to your own lives and everything, and connecting to the big Jedi philosophies as you are with what we've been taught in the films, what this means. I think it's a good ending for him with respect to all those who don't agree. I leave it satisfied every time, but that's just me.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly as Ken just said, we know this is one of the most touchy things that we talk about. So if you have a different point of view, that is totally, totally respected. We are not telling anyone what they should think. We're just sharing our thoughts on that one. And a big part of this, the conversation about Ben Solo, is will there be more in any way, shape, or form? Obviously, we know in Star Wars storytelling, no one is ever really gone. So want to end on the upbeat, Ken, of what future storytelling would you like to see with Kylo Ren and or Ben Solo?
Totally okay with going back, doing a little prequel stuff. You know, it comes up rumors or desires of, you know, Luke and young Ben out and about. We got a lot of that in the Rise of Kylo Ren comic series. I know that's one of the reasons you really love that comic series. We got to see some more Luke. We got to see some Ben in that time and happier times, if you will. So I am all for that and finding a way to do that. Probably it would work better for me on the page than on the screen in some fashion, talking about recasts or, you know, movie magic or volume magic, whatever you want to say, deep fake magic. I'd rather have it probably on the page. Going forward, it's a little tougher for me to envision without everyone on board, even if it's Force Ben or Spirit Ben or something else, you know, with that character. It would need to have Rey. It would need to be involved with her and around that and exploring their connection going forward. And what would it be? Just conversations? My conversations with Ghost Ben? Sure. Great.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is I'm going to take the Star Wars lesson of patience. I feel like there eventually will be more storytelling with all the sequel characters. Who knows if that will be on screen, on the page, both. I think odds are good. Both, because the generation that grew up with the sequel trilogy is going to grow up and they're going to want those stories, and some of the tension about it is going to have dissipated a little bit, and I think there'll be more room to tell those stories. And yeah, I would be perfectly intrigued of, is there a different relationship between Rey and the spirit of Ben Solo because of this dyad? Is there the storytelling possibility there? I'm super intrigued by that, but I'm also really intrigued by looking back. And when I think about Ben Solo and Kylo Ren, I take a ton of comfort in Anakin and Ahsoka, right?
Mm-hmm.
The prequels come out and you think, well, yeah, there's some room in there where you could tell some stories, whatever. But just think of the amount of depth of storytelling that we got out of the Clone Wars animated series, this whole other relationship with Ahsoka. Like, there's so much room in Ben Solo's life and in Kylo Ren's life to tell big stories. And there could be big relationships that we don't know about. And it's been proven, I think, through Clone Wars that storytelling works.
It does. It really does. In ways that you sometimes don't expect. And I'm saying it to myself, you know, where you're just like, what else could they possibly mine from this? And I often discover a lot when you allow it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So for me, a couple of those time periods, you know, it's about 6 years of him being Kylo Ren between, you know, the Rise of Kylo Ren comic book, finding out about Vader, all that stuff, to the beginning of Force Awakens. So that 6 years of training with Snoke, of fighting the pull to the light, who knows what other relationships he has going on there. I'm sure he's got more going on than just fighting with Hux.
Yes.
But that 6 years of being Kylo Ren, that's rich. And yeah, the biggest thing that I would like, we've talked about it a ton, fans have talked about it a ton, of like, there is room for so many adventures of Luke Skywalker and young Ben Solo. The single line that I'm going to sum up here with, I'm paraphrasing, it's from that Rise of Kylo Ren comic book that has the flashback to them, you know, exploring Jedi artifacts. And I think it's cool to see Luke in his prime, and he's kind of aware that there's a little bit of tension with sulky young Ben. They're with Lor San Tekka, and there's that moment where Luke says to young Ben that they're going to this temple, and he says, there'll be weapons, you like weapons. Just that one line is just an explosion of personalities and dynamics, right? Of like Luke trying to keep him engaged, trying to keep him, keep the relationship open, trying to get some responses from this surly teen who's maybe not very forward with his emotions, and Luke being like, not great to encourage him to like weapons, but that's the only time I see a spark in his eye. So I gotta give the kid some weapons. Just that gets me so excited about like a 6 year animated series right there.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Let's do it. Disney Plus.
Let's do it.
What I want.
Yeah. Easy. Done and done. Any other big picture thoughts on celebrating these great characters, or rather character of Kylo Ben?
No, man. I just think it continues to be a really rewarding performance. I think everyone nails what they were asked to do in the sequel trilogy. And Adam is intriguing. All the stories of him kind of being off to the side, you know, you get the sense he wasn't intentionally not as close to the others as they were, and how that works. And, you know, I'm not here to comment on method acting or not. I'm not saying that he's a method actor, but I'm just, from that point to everything on screen, I just continue to find myself enriched by learning the lessons and paying attention to the lessons and asking yourself the tough questions that Kylo kind of helps create in Star Wars. And I'm really thankful. This is, dare I say, one of my favorite characters in Star Wars, which sometimes, as we talk about here in Force Center, it's dangerous to root for the bad guys. I don't root for anything he did during the evil times. I root for his continued redemption in as a character, but also in the fandom.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a fascinating, dynamic, rich, funny, terrifying, beautiful character all around, down to his soul, and of course his hair. Just a great character. So it was really fun to just take the time to absolutely celebrate everything that's great about this character and this performance. So with that, Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
I would absolutely love to do that. We are the Force Center Podcast Feed, and we can be found on Twitter at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and Amazon Music. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can follow me at KatNapsuck or go to my website, KatNapsuck.com. I'll have updated information on stand-up comedy shows in New York on October. Man, what are those dates? 7th and 8th. But that's why I got to update the website. that is out there for you as well. All right, Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can find links to all of my other comedy adventures on my website, josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Kylo Ren's lightsaber ignition stomp, this has been Force Center.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.